Welcome to Emotional Sobriety. We're talking about emotional sobriety and love today, and I read a recent quote from one of my favorite actors, Michael Shannon. This is from a recent story on NPR. So the interviewer asks him, "What does age teach you about love?" And he says, "Age, I think, when you're young, love is very self-serving. You want love from other people. You want to have love or to have a relationship. And then as you get older, you realize that it's probably ultimately more important to love others, regardless of what you get in return." There was a shift, and for me, there was a shift that I experienced. And of course, for me, it's very tied to my recovery and my sobriety. Both the receiving of love and the giving of love decoupled from expectations, which we talk about here a lot. And I've become a lot happier, and I think that happiness stems from love without the expectation of getting treats for it. It's love for its own sake. And that's something that's taken, to the extent that I've learned about it, it's taken a lot of years to develop that aspect of myself. So I feel like there's some emotional sobriety in there probably, right?
I love the question of how has age affected this? I'm really interested in this idea because Alan and I sit here as you know, and we can make jokes about being old, but it's you know, other than the fact that you know that our bodies hurt for no good reason and the clock's going to run out on us, you know, before we wanted to. Being old is a better way to be. I prefer it. It's wonderful. I had an old friend used to say, "However old you are, that's as old as you've ever been." And so just settle in. So I think there are some things that just come with age, but I also think there's some things with maturity that you can really share with other people. And I think the emotional sobriety aspect of, that's one of the many things I love about emotional sobriety as opposed to the focus on one or a particular addiction. It's like, it really is. It's what I always said for the longest time. I always say, you know, there's all the OA, there's AA, there's other, there should just be one big A.
Well, the human condition, like Alan, when you always talk about how we began with the umbilical cord with a dependency at its most a foundational level. And so emotional sobriety is something that you really have to like focus really hard on to disaggregate yourself from the dependency and the expectation, because it's a default setting.
So often what we end up doing in recovery and therapy is trying to stop negative things or get rid of negative things. We can't get rid of anything, but you know, I just go back to the extent of my neurological knowledge, which is the brain cannot encode a negative. So, you know, you know this, Alan, because I do it at my workshops. It's like, you know, don't focus any attention on your left hand at all. Don't focus, certainly don't think of your left thumb, and, you know, go on and on. And it's like, there's not anybody in the world that can think of anything other than that. And all that is, and think about how often we're trying to stop thinking about something or stop doing something. It's like, you know, the truth is we have to have another place to focus.
When you introduced that to me, that concept of focus and how strong that focus on the negative is, it's so true. It's like, you know, we talk about tennis when I tell people all the time, if I go up, don't double fault, forget it. You're double faulting, man. You know, because you just put that in your head. You're going to focus on that, of course.
You and I bonded over Tim Galloway's book. It's like just some of the simple exercises in there are just, I had no idea when I was reading that book that I was actually reading my first self-help book.
You know, I really think that as we talk about emotional sobriety and love, it's important to keep in mind that just like with our emotional maturity, so does our ability to love change, like he was capturing in his quote. But, you know, it's very interesting. I was reading something from Brandon the other day that I think it would be worth to read to you guys right now.
While you're looking, I'll tell you a story real quick about this. That I was writing a message to Brian Lutz today, but I told him at the end, I said, send me pictures of your family. And I explained in the message, I said, I'm an old man now. And as an old man, I actually want to see pictures of young people's families. It's like, you know, when I was younger, I could be very polite about looking at pictures, but I didn't give a holy shit. It's I'm realized, and that I didn't think about that, about just in terms of how my relationship to love has changed until you guys were talking about that. And because I'm going like, yeah, it's like it's a little detail, but it's just like, I'm more interested in just what's going on. I'm really more interested in them than I am in myself. And that's kind of a natural thing that comes with age in my experience. And it's like, I could make the joke. I will make the joke that he's younger, so therefore he's got more going on in his life. Probably more interesting than what's going on in my life. But in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. Yeah.
As I've been reflecting on this, because I think that emotional sobriety has so much to do with our ability to have a more mature love in our life. Trying to parcel out and try to parse out what are the characteristics of that. You know, what we're up against is a lot of myths that come from immature love, right? If you love me, you'd do everything with, you wouldn't want to do anything without me. If you love me, you'll give me what I want. I mean, ideas like this that are so, so based on an emotional, immature concept of love, a very emotionally dependent concept of love. And I think it's very clear when you start to look at it that our society confuses love and dependency. I mean, we differentiate that out very well. You know, it's that we really fuse the two together as though somehow that dependency is a part of being in and of loving a person and having love and giving love and all that other nonsense. And so then
listen to any love song, right?
When I was growing up, John Lennon came out with You Can't Do That. Talk about controlling. If I catch
you. Oh, God. Many of you see control and all this.
My God, if you catch you talking to that boy again, I'm going to let you down and leave you flat. I told you before, you can't do that. I mean, come on. Yeah. Hey. Right. Grow up. But look, he was 19 or wasn't he or something like that when he wrote that song, or 18 years old. It's such a great window into adolescent or teenage and adolescent young adult love. I mean, it just shows us that we're so immature and we're so dependent, you know, at that point in time, and think that, my God, this person's got to do everything I want them to do or else it's not love. As we talk about emotional sobriety and stuff like that, we keep figuring out so much of recovery is in one way misinterpreted to mean you get rid of self. We have to get rid of a certain kind of self, right? A self-centered, selfish self that is...
Well, it's like we were talking about not getting rid of self. No, it's a transformation. It's a change. It's not getting rid of anything.
What we want to do is expand our sense of self to include others, right? To move beyond a self that's all about me to a self that embraces a relationship. And listen to the way, because the question comes up is, what, if any, is there a role for selfishness in love? So this is what Brandon says. He says, of all the nonsense written about love, none is no more absurd than the notion that ideal love is selfless. He goes, what I love is the embodiment of my values in another person. Properly understood, love is a profound act of self-assertion. To love selfishly does not mean to be indifferent to the needs or interests of the partner. To say it once more, when we love, our concept of ourself, and this is so important, when we love with a mature love, our concept of our self-interest expands to embrace the well-being of our partner. That is the great complement of love, to declare to another human being that his or her happiness is of selfish importance to ourself. It would hardly be a compliment to tell a person we love that his or her well-being and happiness are not of selfish interest to us. To love is to see myself in you and to wish to celebrate myself with you. This is hardly unselfish, yet it is the very essence of love. If I accept and respect you, it is not selfish, selfless. If I accept and respect you, it is not selfless. If I honor your integrity, it is not selfless. If I care about your thoughts and feelings, if I hold you in my arms, if I stroke and caress you, if I love you as I love my own life, it is not selfless.
What I'll do is I'll add some Dee Dee Beasley on top of that. My wife has, she's always said, you know, the word selfish has just got a really bad rap, you know, so negative. And what I heard her describing years and years ago when we were trying to work together, by the way, in terms of love, we made a decision that if we had any trouble, we really had problems working together, we would quit working together because our personal relationship was more important. And, so we quit working together. It was a dangerous combo, but she calls it positive selfishness, and she has a definition for positive selfishness. Positive selfishness, and it applies to this, it applies to other places, is self-focus that not only does not harm another person, it actually benefits others. It's like, but it's like, it starts with that selfish part. And it's so good to be able to just use language to kind of blow some things up like that. Like, let's put the word positive with selfish and see if we can't kind of create, just almost balance it out a little bit, because it's just, yeah, it's, yeah, all because we're so ingrained with that, Alan, and that stuff about, you know, it's all about, you know, giving yourself up and not, you know, it's not that. Matter of fact, I could say just you guys know this too, in a healthy relationship, one of the things that makes a healthy relationship that I didn't know anything about from the family I grew up in is each person does an excellent job of representing themselves, representing their own needs. You know, and it doesn't mean you can't change and shift and, okay, this is not that important to me, I can let that go. We can do all that stuff. But it's like you're doing it based on, you're checking it with yourself. Am I okay with this? And that's positive selfishness.
I was in a few long-term monogamous relationships from like the age of 18 through the age of 27. And I realize now, looking back, that I was infatuated with these women, but like, I don't think I was really seeing them because I was only really receiving the relationship in the context of what I wanted out of them or who I wanted them to be. And like, you know, I noticed things, you know, not all my memories are gone. I noticed things just thinking back that I was just like kind of gliding over or just kind of uninterested in regards to like how they were expressing themselves independent of me. And I can feel a difference now, you know, I've got a lot to work on. I do feel like my heart's bigger than it was back then.
Oh, that's a really good description. Cause I can certainly identify with that, with earlier relationships. And it's the epitome of the not positive selfish. It's like, you know, I mean, I was like an ADD kind with relationships. If something wasn't keeping my attention, I just wandered off to another relationship.
I love Dee's description of that, because it's so true, man. The way you said that, positive selfishness, because it fits in line with what Brandon was saying, right? It fits in line with when we define emotional sobriety, is learning to act for yourself without being selfish. It's the same thing, and to act for others without losing yourself. It's that same concept. And that's a good vision for people. As you're listening to that, that is something that's really important to strive for. And if you strive for it, like we talked about in the last meeting, don't set yourself into thinking you're going to make it all the time. But there's a real benefit of just striving, you know? That's why I didn't like that slogan from Nike about just do it. Like if you weren't doing it, then it wasn't okay. But there is something said to, try it. Just keep trying it. You may not do it, but keep trying to do it. And if you do, you're going to get a lot out of that.
We had talked about my book called What Love Is, and I was looking, you were saying so maybe I should bring something up. And I was going to read a little piece. I can take guitar lessons from Eric Clapton, but if I don't practice between lessons, I will not play the guitar. I can show up faithfully for my lessons. I can pay close attention, and I will be able to genuinely claim that I know a lot about playing the guitar. But without practice, what I know will not change is the fact that I cannot play. You know, you can understand everything. This is just an introduction to the book. You can understand everything in this book, or we could just say to everything we're talking about in this podcast, you can understand everything, and it will not make the slightest difference in how you love, because this is about love. It's like, Please read what follows with the intention of creating a daily practice of what you discover to be useful. Practice is the only way to change. And what you're saying, Alan, I just want to say is, and that doesn't just, it's not just do it. It's maybe it's just do it, but then just be ready to do it again and again and again. And it's like, you know, people sometimes will say, how long before my attitude shifts? How long before I no longer want to drink? You know, what's the answer to that question? I don't know, you know, but I do know how it happens. Repetition. You do it over and over and over again, and you get there. And the last sentence here is, and commitment to perpetual practice is the only way to mastery. It's, and it's like, we can't emphasize that enough. Maybe everybody else had that, but I understood practice to a certain degree, but until just maybe even a few years ago, I didn't get it to the extreme that I have it now, which is concepts are the best concepts in the world. They're useless without translation to practice, you know? And it's why we get so frustrated in self-help, because I'll speak for myself. I'd read a book. It was great. I loved it. Or I'd go to a therapy session, learn something great. I love this. This is so good. It'll change me. It's like, I forget it after a while. And then I can't figure out why I'm not better, you know, because nobody told me I had, if you're going to learn to play the guitar, you're going to have to practice.
Well, in the spirit of that quote, I just recently celebrated a 1-year anniversary with my current girlfriend. And it got pretty dicey over the holiday. I was really struggling and she was struggling and we were contemplating ending it. And I'm just feeling grateful like these last few weeks an opportunity to try some different things and to, you know, keep it going. And I have no idea where it's going to end up, but I do love her. And, you know, this
well,
resonates
good for
a
you
lot.
Both. That's a great
Thank
thing.
You.
That's work. I mean, that's a great example. You don't know what, you know, and you don't know where you're going. Turns out I still can't predict the future. You know, that's the only prophecy that works. I have one prophecy. I have one nutshell that says that, you know, accurate prophecy. Tomorrow I will still not know what's going to happen. You know, it's like we don't know. And what you're doing is staying, that's focused in the present. You're going, we don't know where we're going, but we know we don't want to go anywhere right now.
You know, I was going to say, what you wrote reminded me of Eric Fromm's piece called The Art of Loving. And what he did in that, he said that if you really want to learn how to love someone, he says, take a suggestion from an artist and how an artist learns to paint. Says what goes on. First of all, he's got to learn about colors and how to mix them. And then, like you said, it's practice. It's seeing, going to other painters that have got it figured out, listening to them, getting advice. But he says, but then you've got to pick up the brush and start to put it on the canvas. He says, that's what's going to tell you. That's going to give you feedback about what's happening and what's going on. And he says, we've got to think of it as an art that we can get better at if we are conscious in our approach to it. And how many people approach it unconsciously? And that's part of what emotional sobriety and love is about, is being more conscious of our lives. Well, this was a good show. By the way, I want to give a plug for that Love Is book that you wrote. I mean, I got that when you first wrote it, you sent me a copy. I remember I was in Westlake Village. I couldn't put it down. Every day, every two or three pages, because it was filled with so many wonderful reflections that I would meditate on. And so it's really a great piece, man. Nice job on
it. It's
that.
My favorite story about what love is it's just got, it's very short, the short little entries on each page. And I got an email from a fella that I didn't know, that he was the father of an adult client of mine, and he thanked me for this book. And he said it was a couple of years ago over Christmas holidays. He said, I accidentally read it. And I, you know, that which got my attention in the thing. And what his daughter had done, which I think is beautiful, she put it in the bathroom. It's like, and so over the time that he was visiting with her, it's like he accidentally read the book, and he wrote me and just thanked me for it. It's like, you know, and I asked him if it was okay if I used what he said as a endorsement, because I wanted to stop saying this is a coffee table book, and realize it's a bathroom book. You know, and it's like, so we got a lot of a good response from that too. But it's like, I love writing books, period. But I love writing books for people who don't necessarily read books, you know, and I've written several of them like that, where it's like, it doesn't take much. You can kind of just hang out with the book for a little while and you will have read most of it.
You know, the good news, Tom? More of those people every day. All right. Love and emotional sobriety, and more to come. We're cooking up some new events and places to see Al and Tom.
Tend your life. Tend your myth. Cultivate your narrative with whomever you're with.